Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
Today I have three observations that are related to one another about sharing our work and the viewer's experience. And I must say, these three observations come from my years of sharing work with people and observing their reactions, not to my work, but to the process of looking at work. And I can best sum this all up, I guess, by saying that experience is a cruel teacher. I may not be speaking for all of you, but I know when I produce a body of work or even a single image that thrills me, that I love that experience. It's a sort of artistic and creative high that is addictive. And we love the success of having one of our images or one of our projects turn out like we had anticipated it would. And it's a thrill. And a part of that thrill is often naturally just wanting to share it with other people in the hopes that they will feel the same thrill that we do. And, of course, they almost never do. For, I'm sure, all kinds of good, logical, dispassionate reasons. But nonetheless, it's a bit of a disappointment for us because we would like to think that when people view our work, they would have the same sort of thrill about it and in response to it that we have as we produce it or as we review and reflect on an accomplishment that we'd previously done in days or years past. But people don't respond that way. And I've always been kind of fascinated by that. Yet, at the same time, I try to be pragmatic and convince myself, sometimes successfully, that the reason I produce work is for my own satisfaction, not for the applause of other people. But the applause of other people is awfully nice. And when I get compliments on my work, I like that. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's always lovely to know that you've touched someone with a piece of your artwork and created a little bit of bond with them over a sentiment or a feeling or an emotion. But as I say, that's kind of a rarity for three reasons. And I'm dividing this particular podcast into three parts, which I'll try to get through fairly quickly. The first of which is viewer fatigue. This is a term I had not been familiar with until just a few years ago. Somewhere I ran across the idea, and I thought, yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I've experienced. Let's say someone wants to come over to your house and see some of your work. That's always nice. And so then you have to make a decision. What work are you going to show them? Well, do you pull out one photograph, your latest, your most pleased with photograph, and show them just one, and then say, okay, that's it? No, no one does that. You have an opportunity to show lots of work. And of course, we all know that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so you're not going to pull out one piece of work. So what do you pull out? One seems sort of arbitrarily limited. So do you bring out 500 prints? Well, that would seem to be a bit overwhelming. And viewer fatigue is a reality in sharing our work. So how do you decide how many images you want to make available? Do you make one box? Do you show the work that you created from one location or one shoot or one overseas trip? And how do you choose? And how many are people willing to look at? To some degree, in my experience, viewer fatigue is not a single solitary number. So you can't just say, show somebody X number of prints and that's always the right number of prints. It depends on the context in which you're showing work. For example, the number of individual prints people are willing to look at is probably less than the number of prints they might look at in a book, for example. Because in a book, they expect to see 150 images plus or minus, where a box with 150 prints might be a lot. And by the way, when I show people my book, they don't go through every single page and look at every image. They'll go through the first dozen pages or the first two dozen pages. And then they'll sort of flip through the rest, you know, that book thumb flip, so that each subsequent image gets sort of a glance. Sometimes they'll start at the back and thumb flip through the front, but they don't look at every single image when you show them a book. This is one of the reasons why when I show work in a live scenario, I love to show chapbooks, because they're relatively small, 8 pages, 12 pages, maybe 16 pages, so a viewer can consume the entire chapbook in one fell swoop. They're likely to look at every image. They're even likely to read the text if the text isn't too lengthy. So in the context of a chapbook, 12, 16, maybe at most 20 images might make sense. Where that might be a little thin in a stack of prints, and possibly too many if you traipse them around the house showing them framed work on the wall. So the trick is to find that Goldilocks experience for the viewer. Not too few, not too many, just exactly right. But that's not likely to be a fixed number. It's something we need to be sensitive to as they're looking at the work. If their attention flags, that tells us something. If the conversation moves sideways, that tells you something. Finding the right amount of exposure to your work can be kind of tricky because viewer fatigue definitely sets in. And I think the classic way to think about viewer fatigue is that our brains are only capable of maintaining that sort of visual intensity for a finite amount of time, and then it just becomes overwhelming. That's my experience when I look through somebody's big, thick book of 200 or 300 images. I can't look at all of them at once. I would much prefer to look at 10 images or 20 images and put the book aside for a while and come back to it later and keep looking at the additional images. My brain just gets clogged up with too much visual information and I have to have a break. I think that's a common experience that everybody has to one degree or another, and as exhibitors of our own work, it's something to keep in mind. Your audience will only have the capacity to view so much work before they'll need a break. And by the way, sometimes that break is, hey, would you like to have some coffee or perhaps an adult beverage, and then look at some more work. Again, at least that's been my experience. If I try to show someone 50 pieces of work, that's asking a lot of their attention span. But to show them 25 pieces of work and then bring out some refreshments and show another 25 pieces of work seems to work better. So number one is viewer fatigue. Issue number two is what I'll title viewing in isolation. Here again, occasionally we all have the opportunity to show our work in person. But I've always found that a bit awkward, because I know the viewer's attention is divided. Keep in mind, if they've come over to the house, or you've met them somewhere in a coffee shop, or you've taken a box of work over to their house to show, it's essentially a social engagement, not an art review and critique session. Even if you're just taking work over to a photo buddy and you're looking at each other's work, it's still primarily a social situation. And as such, the viewer's attention is divided. They want to look at the work, but they're also engaged with you in conversation and all the rest that goes on in a social scene, particularly if there's more than one person you're showing work to. And because their attention is divided, they can't really have the same kind of experience they would have if it wasn't a social scene. If they had your work at home, on their own, to look at their own leisure. So keep in mind that a social scene is likely to limit how much people are willing to look at. It will also limit how much of your work they actually absorb, because they may tend to glance at it with part of their consciousness while the other part of their consciousness is engaged in conversation. And so a social scene like that is not necessarily a great place to show work. Now, there are some exceptions. And here again, chapbooks, I've discovered, have come to the rescue because they're relatively small. I've experienced ever so many social situations in which maybe there's 2 or 3 or 4 people over for dinner or something, and somebody says that they'd like to see some of my work. Well, I pull out the chapbooks because any one of those people are willing to take a chapbook and sort of disengage from the social scene for a few minutes to look at a chapbook, because it's relatively short. It's, like I say, maybe 12 pages and just less than a paragraph of text. They can disengage long enough to see that and get absorbed in it, and then maybe pass it to the next person who will repeat the procedure and disengage from the social scene to look at that particular chapbook. And maybe, working around the room, I can show a half a dozen or maybe even a dozen chapbooks before eventually the viewer fatigue sets in. So that's been my experience with chapbooks. But even more so with this new body of work that I started just 4 or 5 months ago called Field Notes. I've talked about this elsewhere, but in case you've missed that, I better describe what they are. I inherited, someone gave me, about 500 or 600 sheets of 4x6-inch inkjet paper. What am I going to do with 4x6-inch paper? I'm sure that's a size that exists for the purpose of printing out family snapshots or whatever, but I wanted to do something artistic with it. So I decided to try a project that combined one image and a little tiny bit of text, a sentence or two, just a quick observation, intending that they're somewhat pithy, maybe they ask a question, maybe they're humorous and funny. Each one could have its own purpose. But at its essence, field notes are a combination of image and text that are intended to be consumed almost instantly. So, for example, one of the first ones I did had a picture of fallen leaves on the ground photographed in Acadia National Park. Lots and lots and lots of us have made that kind of image. And so showing an image of fallen leaves, beautiful golden, yellow things, etc. in the fall, is one kind of experience, but not a unique experience. But I added a little bit of text underneath the picture on this piece of 4x6-inch paper that said, "When one leaf falls, it's a tragedy. When all the leaves fall, it's a lesson." So a little hint, a little touch of philosophy that gets people to think beyond just, is this a pretty picture, and do I like the color in the fallen leaves, etc.? It gives them pause to think. So I've made a stack of these. I probably have 30 of them or so now. And I enclose them in a little tin box that I found on Amazon.com, so they become sort of a collection. And interestingly enough, when I show those in a group session, people will go through the entire stack as they've disengaged from the social aspect of the gathering, and they'll look at each one, and they'll read each single sentence or two sentences, whatever it is, and it makes a substantial impact. They talk about them. They mention. They'll say, "Oh, I love this one," which often gives me an opportunity to make a gift. And once I say, "Oh, if you'd like to take it home, you're welcome to," and then everybody ends up with one, and I don't know what, they use them as bookmarks or refrigerator art, I don't really care. What I care about is I've made a connection with them with this little project called Field Notes. But each field note can be consumed in 15 or 30 seconds because it's one picture and one or two lines of text. So it's comfortable in the social scene for them to disengage long enough to look at that. And once they've looked at one, if they become interested in it, they'll look at a few more, maybe go all the way through the entire collection. To a very large degree, the key is they're viewing them in isolation because they have mentally disengaged from the group. And I know this because at some point when the conversation comes back to them, they will have missed part of the conversation. They'll say, "Oh, I didn't hear you talking about that," or something, which tells me that they didn't hear the conversation because they were disengaged from the conversation and viewing in isolation. The same thing happens in a gallery exhibition. A gallery exhibition is, at least in my opinion, less about the artwork than it is about the social scene, as compared, say, to a museum. When you go into a gallery, it's usually, there's a lot of conversation, especially on opening night. There's a lot of people meeting up. There's a general high level of noise that's happening that makes it difficult to view work on the wall in a gallery in isolation. That's why I rarely go to art openings. If I want to see the artwork, I'm much better served by going, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon when I might be the only one in the gallery and have the ability to view work in isolation. Viewing work in isolation is a big key to connecting with the work because you don't have divided attention. And this is one reason why I love producing my work as freely distributable PDFs, because I know from the emails that I receive back from people that they're much more likely, when they download one of my free PDFs, to really look at the artwork and go through it, and maybe go through a second time, and maybe read the text and then look at the images and then read the text again and look a second time, because they might get something different in a second viewing. So giving people the ability to look at my work outside of a social scene is an important part of my strategy that's led to PDFs. And the same thing can happen with chapbooks, although chapbooks are a physical thing, so usually what has to happen is someone has to buy that, or they have to buy a book, because I just can't afford to give away books or give away chapbooks. They're too expensive to do that with, at least with my budget. So in order to provide viewers with the least amount of barrier to seeing my work, the freely distributable PDF has worked beautifully. Once people have it downloaded, and that's the only commitment I ask from them, is they take the time to download the PDF and put it on their hard drive somewhere. Once they've done that, they can go back and look at that at their leisure, when they're in the mood, when they have the time to give it the kind of attention that they want to. So it completely removes it from the social scenario or from the kind of thing that happens when we bring our work to our local photo club or whatever. As much as I would love to think that people can make full engagement with my work in a social setting, my experience tells me that they just can't, that they need to have isolation to really connect with what I'm doing artistically and visually, for the simple reason that they have to be able to give it their full attention, which implies viewing in isolation. And that's easily enough accomplished with books and chapbooks and folios and things that are necessarily engage some sense of commerce. But of course, the minute we engage commerce, we're going to limit how many people view our work. So the freely distributable PDF to me has become, for me, an ideal way to share my work outside of commerce that allows me to connect with people on a deeper level than even having them show up to the house and look at individual prints or something like that. So that's viewing in isolation. Now, the third component of this conversation is what I'll title viewer immersion. And here's what I mean by that. There comes a time when we're reading a novel or a short story or something like that, when we're fully immersed in the story's reality. We feel as though we're not reading, but rather just being carried along a timeline from another world or another time. Haven't we all had the experience where we're reading a novel or something, a story that we're really involved in, and suddenly we realize an hour's gone by, and we weren't even aware of the time that passed because we were so involved in the story that we were more or less disengaged from our real life. That viewer immersion is, I think, one of the primary goals of producing artwork if we choose to share our artwork with an audience. If an audience is important to you at all, and it isn't for some photographers, I know that, but if an audience is important to you, isn't that the ideal kind of relationship you would love to have with them? Is that they become seduced by your artwork and your creative vision to the point where they are transported out of their own reality into your reality, whatever that is. It may be a different location on the planet, travel photography. It may be a different experience in a social situation. That's maybe street photography or something like that. Or it could be that you're absolutely fascinated with botanicals or rock structures, and you want people to disengage with their life so that they give themselves to the visual immersion that you're providing through your images. Isn't that feeling of immersion something we would like our viewers to have when they're viewing a photograph? That they get so fascinated with what we've photographed and how we've presented it that they sort of lose themselves in what we're presenting. Viewer immersion, I think, is the goal, or at least it can be, and maybe it even should be. And if not, is there a parallel in the visual arts that we should strive for other than viewer immersion? I'm not aware of it. So if viewer immersion is what we're really hoping for, that people get lost in our photographs and get swept up with what it is that we've presented so that they're transported through time and space to view our response to the world, if that's the objective, then doesn't that imply that we have to go back to viewer fatigue and viewing in isolation as two of the keys to prompt, maybe even create, viewer immersion? Notice that all of this has nothing to do with the quality of your photographs, or in particular, the quality of your equipment, or your processing, or your presentation method. It all has to do with the viewer's experience and how viewer fatigue, viewing in isolation, and viewer immersion are a way to think about what happens when people view our work and how we might want to do things strategically, whether that's with a certain kind of media or a certain kind of editing or a certain kind of presentation in a social situation, to try to overcome viewer fatigue, to provide a way for people to view in isolation so that they can immerse themselves in the experience. I titled this podcast Sharing Our Work Goldilocks Style, and finding that method that's just right to share your work is what this is all about. In the Goldilocks story, of course, it was sort of done by accident. The bears didn't intend to seduce Goldilocks by putting out different size bowls. It just happened that that's the way Goldilocks stumbled across the porridge, and she found the one that was just right. What I'm suggesting is that as creators of artwork, maybe we can strategically think about how we're presenting our work so that when Goldilocks shows up to look at our photographs, that we can influence her experience so that she has the best possibility of being able to connect with our work in an immersive way, and that our work might, if we're lucky and if we've done this right, might connect with them in a way that's meaningful, that's important, that's even memorable. So those are the three things to be aware of: viewer fatigue, viewing in isolation, with the ultimate goal of viewer immersion in the work.
Copyright 2025, Lenswork Publishing.